We know him as our student minister. We also know him as a future deacon in the Global Methodist Church. But what else should we know? Next on Table Talk. Hey, welcome back. I'm here with Nick Shepherd. Yes, he is a student minister, and yes, he will be ordained deacon in the Global Methodist Church, but there's a whole lot more to Nick than meets the eye, and yes, we're taking a chance on finding that out right now. Hey, Nick.
That's dangerous.
I know, Nick.
Well, rolling the dice, man.
Welcome back. 2 weeks in a row for you, brother.
Sure. Feels like we were just recording the other one yesterday.
It seemed like yesterday, or just a few minutes ago, we were actually recording. So I literally met you when you were dating and engaged to Lauren. But tell us a little bit before Mississippi College. Tell us about quickly growing up. What kind of place you grew up in, and was your calling to ministry or calling to Jesus in that time frame? Sort of give us a quick overview of that process in your life.
So, born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that's hometown. My mom's house is right outside of it, called Denham Springs. It's, you know how there's a minimum, like, oh, this is the first place you can call that isn't Baton Rouge or isn't in Dothan, but it's still really close. That Denham is technically that dividing line. Went to a K-12 private Christian school called Parkview. So grew up not only in that Christian environment, but also in a church called Walker Baptist. Again, that's kind of in the opposite direction from Baton Rouge, but grew up in a faith-filled household. Came to Christ summer, I think, of 2008. So I was born in 97, so that's what, 9 years old. It was the Lifeway VBS that my church was running that year, and it was a Hawaiian themed. It was Outrigger Island. So somebody can do that math real quick.
You actually remember the theme of Bible school?
Yeah.
I can't remember last year's theme at our own Bible school.
So you did Outrigger Island. Alan.
Even our producer remembers
it.
The Hawaiian theme.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. The songs are earworms because they want them to stick in the kids' heads, and it did. But it bites you in the butt when you start volunteering in tech ministry and have to be the tag guy for VBS, and then that stuff sticks in your head, too. But yeah, Outrigger Island, I think it was 2008. That's what my previous Googling has found out. But So what was happening is, growing up in a home with a very supportive family, it was my mom, my sister, and I at that point, with her extended family as well, my grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, very large family, but grew up in a faith-filled household. So it was getting from everywhere. I will say, kind of in hindsight, that 2008 decision may have been a little more about doing something that I thought would make my family excited, right? And it wasn't until I was a sixth or a seventh grader going on my first summer youth trip that I really got hit. And I say this jokingly, but kicked in the head by the gospel, where it's like, oh, that's real. Oh, that's important. That's that moment. We can talk about salvation before that, would I have gone to heaven or not, whatever. When I was in middle school, when I said, hey, I want to follow Jesus and make this my thing. That's a big thing we bring out of our confirmation process, is it's not your mom's faith. It's not your dad's faith, not your grandparents' faith. This is you're following Jesus for yourself.
And historically, and this has been research done about this, mm-hmm. that this grade, the grade that you're talking about, sixth or seventh grade, is the vast majority of decisions are made.
Yeah.
Right. The older you get, the less likely to make a decision. Right. But the crucial age that's why we do sixth grade now.
Exactly.
Right? There's a reason we do sixth grade, because we were encouraging them to make a faith decision at this point. And the vast majority, and again, I heard this research literally back in the early 90s.
Well, it's also developmental too, right? Because that's the point in time where you start physically forming in your brain your conception of your own identity apart from your parents.
Yeah.
as, oh, this is who I am. That's why middle schoolers get in trouble for doing stupid things to impress their friends. And now kids do that earlier in life, but really that's where it kicks in. Because it's, I am extremely conscious of what everybody else's opinion of me is, because I'm forming my identity from everybody else. And that's why we do emphasize that is, well, hey, in my experience, starting that time in my life developmentally with that care for, okay, actually, I want to know who Jesus wants me to be too. You get it in there early. You start learning things that keep you from making foolish decisions down the line, in a way. But what's interesting about that too is that moment, it was a Fuge camp. Fuge is a mission camp ministry where I kind of started working through that call to ministry in its very, very early forms. I didn't want to claim it. I didn't want to say I'm going to be a pastor. But what I did was I started leaning in and saying, hey, seventh grader, eighth grader, what does it mean to lead, trying to get behind the scenes of what is this church stuff? And was on track to being a student leader at Walker. And I'm always going to love and appreciate Ray McCon, who was my youth guy at the time, older, bald as a cue ball, but loved what he does and still does. He's still at that church, actually, but he's not the youth pastor. He moved over Next Generation's ministry, like more of a discipleship pastor like Bobby, but he brought in the new youth guy and discipled him. So like love Ray McCon so much. What happened that kind of threw things off was January 2013. So I was a sophomore in high school. We experienced a loss in our family with the death of my younger stepbrother, but my younger brother, Austin, who very tragic situation. And that was, we talked about getting a second day about getting kicked in the head by the gospel. I really believe that even though like divorced parents, like, yeah, we've had deaths in the family, that's the first time I got kicked in the head by life. And I understand that there's a thing about taking my brother's death and making it about my experience. We're talking about my experience here, but I understand that. But just what was my experience was this, hey, not going the full atheist route, not going the full agnostic route, but definitely going the whole, Jesus, I really don't know what to do with you right now route. And here's a fascinating situation to be in. You're a guy at a private Christian school. You've been elected class chaplain. You lead prayers in the mornings. You're been on track of maybe a call to ministry guy at your home church. And everybody's got these expectations of you. And imagine with me here, living this life where you've got that mask on and you learn to have that mask on. But behind the scenes, you don't even know if you like Jesus that much, let alone want to follow him. And I genuinely believe that was one of the more soul-sucking times of my life. Part of that is I was in a dating relationship that I really didn't need to be in, some pretty unhealthy stuff going on there. But that was about a year of my life. From January of my sophomore year, the next year I got my license. That March, I became a junior. While I was living the mask life so well, oh, and throughout all this, was trying to figure out any other thing I can do with the rest of my life. I'm going to be an engineer like my dad and like my robotics team coach. I'm really bad at math. I'm going to be a music band director because my band director was like a father to me. I'm tone deaf. Like, you know what I'm saying? I was going to all these other things trying to say, well, I'll do this, I'll do this, I'll do this. And I was wearing the Jesus mask so well, I got asked to go on this pilot mission trip between Parkview Baptist School and Parkview Baptist Church, kind of like Providence and First Pres, right, that relationship, to Nicaragua. So I'm on a flight to Diriamba, Nicaragua, to serve people and tell people about Jesus, and I don't even know where I'm at with Jesus at that moment. And that's the moment where God kind of pulled me back into his story of breaking down some walls that were there. There's a conversation with a guy I love a lot, an adult volunteer who was on that trip, who sat me down and really looked at me and said, you've got this mask on. That's why I use that mask language, because that's the word he used. Just tell me what's up. And I just broke down on a porch in Central South America. I don't know. In another country.
Nicaragua.
And that's that moment where God kind of said, hey, you've had your time to have this distance. And not anymore. So through a long story I'll tell you later, I got tricked into coming back to church. It's actually Parkview Baptist Church. And as I was coming into that church, a guy named Rich Mayfield, who was the new youth pastor there, came in. And Rich was the Paul to my Timothy. He was another dad figure in my life. And he pulled that call to ministry out of me again. It was like, hey, and he knew, I've been very honest with him up to this point about what was up within me. Dude, you've been sprinting away from this as hard as you can. You've gone down every other route. You've looked at everything else. Why don't you let me work through this call to ministry thing with you? And that's how I wound up saying, yeah, I think I want to do this for the rest of my life. So within all that, I wound up choosing Mississippi College, which is a Christian school in right outside of Jackson, to do my bachelor's degree in Christian studies and philosophy. That's actually the college campus that I say I got saved at. That Fuge camp back in middle school was at MC. That's how that connection got made. I found an old flyer in a box. So at MC, just started trying to learn as much as I can, started forming new relationships, trying to find identity gets formed throughout development, but college is that really big step of, all right, I'm my own person. That's where I met Lauren and fell in love with her. We dated throughout our college experience, got married right out of college. And I know that's a lighting a big part of the story, but that time was really focused on growing and learning and getting ready to do the work as much as I could. And right out of college, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky. I was going up there to attend the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Lauren was very gracious to go up there with me and try to figure out her school stuff there as well. Kyle, throughout that college process is when you met me for the first time, when I would come while we were dating, but definitely when Lauren and I were doing premarital counseling for you to do our wedding, right? And I'll say just very briefly, that senior year, early engagement, early marriage time period was a very difficult time for us due to some family dynamic issues, due to stress and mental health things. That is another pretty dark period of our life.
Both sides of the family, right? Not just one.
Primarily, it was mine.
Okay.
Primarily, it was stuff from my end. David's health was also David's a factor at that time. That's fair.
It started on a downward slope then, right? Because he had to
Mr.
Retire.
David being my father-in-law who passed away recently. Yeah. But I say all that to say, to get to, we were in Louisville, fresh new start. Everything's going great. COVID. And it's just wild, man. And I'll say that's a heck of a time to figure out how to be married to each other, is being locked in an apartment with not a lot of relationships in a place that neither of you are from. Lauren showed me the grace of God in some really amazing ways, in ways that I didn't know how to be a husband yet, in ways I didn't know I needed to mature yet. I was doing school. She was doing school. We were both working. I was doing some youth internship type stuff. But it became very clear, hey, Nick, you need to take a step back away from this pastoral thing for a minute because you don't have your head right about it. And there were some doors getting closed on that front. And the way I kind of explain it is I made my calling about the fact that the word church needed to be in the name of the person who signed my paychecks more than, no, dude, you're here to serve my people. You're here to build up my people. You're here to serve me. So as I was discerning that, I took a step back from trying to pursue that kind of stuff. Lauren and I also kind of felt the Lord move in, hey, it's time for you guys to move to Dothan. And part of that was taking care of Mr. David. Yep. But we had made that decision before we had got the news that he did develop cancer. So it wasn't just, hey, we're going back to take care of Lauren's parents. It really was a thing God had done separately. And then that came along to confirm, okay, yeah, that's part of this too. So summer of 2021, I think, we moved down here. Lauren picked up a part-time gig as your admin assistant here. I was working at Chick-fil-A. The folks at Providence Christian were very gracious to roll the dice on me. And a lot. And
would you use the word gracious or desperate? Which
it was desperate, but I'm being kind. They needed a Latin teacher, and I had more experience than the math teacher they were about to hand the book to and say, "Figure it out."
You actually had Latin as a child,
as a high schooler.
Student, yeah.
But I would say a lot to say, I was in this place where Lauren and I were, I was under that mandate from God of take a step back from this. Be a person invested in the next generation of God's people without needing to be paid for it. And so that's what we did. We, Lauren and I volunteered. We wound up being volunteer small group leaders for the combined guys, girls, small group at that point. And just kind of came to this sweet period of restoration and figuring some stuff out. And there was a sudden change around here. And you guys asked me, hey, can you step in interim? Because I was becoming more and more jaded in working through my connection to the Southern Baptist Convention on a couple points, but I hadn't at that point claimed, yes, I'm a Methodist, let's do it. But you guys said, hey, can you cover through the rest of the school year? And full-time teaching and youth ministry is not a good way to do youth ministry, but it happened. And I appreciate y'all being gracious on that front.
Do you want to know the person that said, won't you think about Nick for this? Huh. But you don't know who that was?
Who?
Annette Loveridge.
Really?
She was the one that said, God, what about Nick? I went, okay. So yeah, Annette Loveridge made me put that to the forefront.
Tell her that I appreciate that.
I never told you that.
No, never until this moment. But thank you for telling me that. Yeah. And that was a chaotic time in the church. Hayes was sick. Obviously, youth guy stepped away. I, because of that thing, had said, okay, I'm not in this to get this full-time job. If it works out, that's great. If God wants it, that's great.
And you had made a commitment to Providence to
finish
the whole
through
year.
The school year.
Yeah,
right.
We knew that.
I'm gonna see what God does here, and we'll see how it goes. And the Lord just made it clear that this was the direction. You guys wanted to turn interim to, hey, this is our guy. God made it very clear. Hey, you've had that kind of season in the wilderness away from it. I've humbled you in a few ways. I've done some work on your heart. I think you're ready to step into this and do some learning, because there's only so much you can learn in a seminary classroom.
Yeah, right.
I mean this, and I'm so appreciative of of all that, but like 80% of it is you just got to learn it by doing it and learn it from people who've done it before. Within all that, that first summer was a lot just because it was a lot. I think that's the summer that Hayes passed at my timeline,
correct.
Right? Right.
Yeah, correct.
And then the following school year.
He did sign off on you going full time.
Oh, he did. Yeah. So I did have the honor of working side by side by Hayes full time for a very short amount of time, because full time was June 1st. And then he started getting sick. Just how that timeline worked out. But we're here. And so I was full time youth ministry. Lauren was part time admin stuff. She was helping me, obviously. Then you guys moved her up to full time and we got to work together on that front. And now her time has gotten freed up to where that's what both of us do, or devoted to doing youth ministry. And to hit some really quick high points, like that's been such an immense blessing to work with my best friend, my partner, not only in dishes getting done, dinner getting done, laundry getting done, but also like, hey, we get to live out and discern our callings together and to be with God's people and serve them together. And within that process is when I realized I'd not been given a fair read of what Methodism is. So I said, I should learn what this thing is. And then I fell in love with it. And now this is the place I want to be at for the rest of my career, is serving this mystical Methodist church. I mean, that's where I'm running down ordination. That's where all that comes in.
I made you read a couple of Wesley sermons, didn't I?
See, but I'd already said I want to. Okay. So referring to, we did a sermon series on that. By that point, I was already like, yes, this is what I want to do, right? And I know we're probably over time, but I say all that to say, if it isn't apparent by how I've said it, I can take credit for absolutely none of it. Everything has been the abundant grace of God putting it in my lap and saying, hey, dude, I'm actually the one making this work, not you. Literally every single step of the process, it's God coming in and saying, here it is. I've got it ready for you. I go before you. I go behind you. I'm the one leading your path. I'm the one making your paths make sense. I'm leading you down those for my name's sake. And it's just been the most humbling story in the most beautiful way. And the way that humility, if you actually have had to live it out and start to learn it And it's never a thing you arrive at. It's all you know is the more humble you get, the more you realize how much work has to go into staying humble. But that's been just such a big theme of my story is God saying, dude, you need to take a chill pill on how important you think you are. You can't take credit for any of it. Any gift or however smart you may be, I'm the one that gave it to you in the first place because I want you to do these things. Anything that you've been able to step into opportunity wise, I've dropped in your lap. Like, it's just been God's immense grace and obvious provision every step of the way, which has set me up for to where we are now so beautifully of, yeah, you don't see me out on social media trying to build a platform. I don't really want my name. I like preaching main church because I like preaching, not because I want to be important or be of any note. Like, there is a version of me further up the timeline that would have been really concerned about my name being on as much stuff around here as possible because I want it to be important. And I just cannot be more grateful that God has cut that out of me. And I don't want that.
All right. So we're going to update people real quick because you are going to be ordained deacon in the Global Methodist Church, mm-hmm. Which, to your understanding, what does that mean, actually?
So ordination refers to attaining a few waypoints, like educational waypoints, requirements. I'm sorry, not waypoints. I just went and did a psych eval, a pretty intense psych and spiritual health eval a couple weeks back. I'll get those results next week. Being under,
yeah, let's not share those publicly. We might be scared.
All right, they know I'm crazy. That's not the secret. It's how crazy. Between that and interviews, and it is a big deal to attain ordination in the Gold Methodist Church. It takes a lot of work, and I'm very grateful to have made it this far. But what ordination is, it's the Gold Methodist Church saying, we recognize that God has put this calling on your life to serve. And that opens the door to stuff like blessing and presiding over sacraments, right? Over the Lord's Supper, over baptism. That as a deacon, how it works is my job is to lead under the guidance of a, quote, presiding elder. So under a very special circumstance, the GMC can say, Nick, we need you to run this church. Do you want to do it? And if I wanted to, great. But even then, there'd be a lot of accountability and a lot of conversation. But the deacon role is meant to be, I have these gifts and the ability to lead. I want to do that under the guidance of somebody who's had to go even further into ordination as a true elder of the church. And that would be you and Bobby, and in this case, our presiding elders. So the reason I wanted to do this is I just want to be able to serve the church better. I want to do whatever I can to be the best I can be for the people I covenant. And also, I don't want to go anywhere. If I work at Covenant for the next 30 years, I couldn't be happier. Eldership is where I want to be just because I want to pursue that God's call in my life. I want to be under that accountability and fellowship of the denomination with working in concert with the other ordained folks in our conference. I want to be part of that community and do whatever it takes to serve as effectively and as faithfully as I can.
Yeah. And I'm not going to put words into your mouth, but I am. All right.
Sure.
but based on prior conversations, really based on this conversation, that right now what you're doing is where God has you.
Mm-hmm.
And basically you're not seeing – you don't have this I bet one question that you probably answered in your psych evaluation is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you see yourself in 10 years?
No.
Some of those are always in the psych. You didn't have to answer that in the psychological?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm actually surprised that you say that. That didn't come up in that conversation.
Every other time we've had to do that.
It was more about, what is your relationship to mental health and therapy and that kind of thing.
So I'm surprised they didn't have those fill in the blank sentences. But if you had.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm sorry. Keep going.
Seriously, because I had to do that. I mean, back in the 90s, where you see yourself 5 years, where I'm at right now, where you see yourself in 20 years or whatever. Bishop, that was a pipe dream. I'm glad I didn't go there. But
what do you think? So, my pipe dream is rubbing elbows with important Southern Baptist people at the convention every year, right? No, and I mean that.
Yeah.
And I've repented of that, no, I'm not the important one. But are you asking the question, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Or yeah,
is that
yeah.
Right where I'm at.
Yeah.
and doing better at it.
Based on prior, based on where you got to get here, it was all about where God was leading, not where Nick was wanting to go. That seemed to be the mode that you've been in for a number of years.
Up until the decision to go to Louisville.
Yeah.
I owned that as I was chasing down my own ambitions at that point.
Okay.
And these are all things that I've had lots of conversations and very open with people that I know and talk to about it. Like that is I'm not extremely proud of the heart space that went into that decision. Right. But that's that mindset is what led us here.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I sort of picked up on that the last few years.
Yeah.
Where God led this to lead A, B, and C. I'm following A, B, C, 1, 2, 3 right now.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm not seeing beyond where I'm at right now, but God will make that clear. If what is next is Covenant Student Ministry. Next year, the next year, the next year. That's what's next.
Exactly.
Right? And God will show me clearly what the next thing is, if there is something beyond covenant, right?
And the last thing I'll say, not even as an asterisk on that, but just in general, is I've known guys in my position who treat it as their training ground to go be a quote-unquote real pastor. That's not where my head's at. This is my calling, is to work with young people. And I will do it as long as God makes it doable and is what he wants and makes it clear this is it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not using Covenant as a training ground to go do real ministry. This is the realest ministry I've ever done, and this is what I'm made for.
Yeah, you are. You are a pastor to a number of people already.
70 kids?
Minimum. That's minimum. So, well, thank you, Nick. Thank you for sharing part of your story. I know you condensed it pretty well to down.
That's a bold
yeah, you got
bold statement.
You got it condensed down pretty well. But thank you again. Thank you for your heart. Thank you for your passion. And thank you for marrying Lauren, too, so you can come here.
Thank her for choosing my – sorry, but – But thank you for the opportunity, Kyle.
All right, man. Appreciate it. I know you'll be on another podcast in the near future, so look forward to the next time. See you, man. Bye-bye.